This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We are live at Edgar's Cantina at T-Mobile Park. It's Wyman and Bob. Lefko in for Wyman. Seattle Sports on 710. In the past 2 days, Wyman's been on vacation all week. We had our buddy Ryan Roland Smith filling in the past 2 days, and we couldn't get enough. We said, please come back.
Nah, I thought we had enough. Huh?
Please come back. Well, yeah, Lefko had enough. Yeah. I begged. I said, come on, Lefko.
I did get a text from Lefko, because we did the post-game last night too, by the way, after the game. Fun post-game, Mariners post-game show. And I said to him, I said, hey, I'm going to come out and say what's up to you guys. And then he's like, oh, hey, would you want to come on the floor? I'm like, okay, let's do it.
He missed you.
Yeah.
He missed you. Good to have you back. And, you know, it's always open door. Anytime you want to come on, you're welcome. One thing before we get into the Mariners and what they've done and all this good stuff, I got to ask you, what's up with the apology video? What's that all about? Yeah, I thought I was watching it. You tweeted, for people that don't know, Ryan tweeted out a bit of an apology video, and I'm watching it waiting for you to start laughing. I'm waiting for you to start smiling. And you seem sort of down, and I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm sorry, guys. I'm like, don't you apologize to these jackals. Owe them an apology.
All right, I was messing around. Like, I was joking around. You know, I was trying to say it in a good way. Like, the Ty France is like, hey, we're all good. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because it was a positive thing. If it was something where I was like, if it was the other way, if I was like, oh, no, he needs to get back on the field and then he's on the IL, obviously it would be a little bit different tone. But I was messing around. So a couple things. On social media, people were blowing me up because I listened to the show in the afternoon, and for 2 days straight, I was like, nope, got to put him on the IL, needs to rest. don't let us see what we saw the last couple of years. So I felt like I was going to do it. But it was a fun thing because he came out and raked, hit two bombs. Are you kidding
me? First time as a Mariner.
Yeah. I mean, literally gets hit in the wrist, drops. You know, like we saw him. I mean, he was like, he went down hard, harder than the times when he did go on the IL. So I'm like, oh, no chance. And then he comes out, he's got this little wrist guard, he's molded to his hand. And, you know, in before the game, I was watching him do his thing. And I was telling you guys, I'm like, I'm out there with binoculars watching, paying attention, because I saw he's in the lineup. Comes out, hits two bombs. So I felt.
First pitch he saw.
Yeah, that.
Home run.
Must be nice. But I will say this. The comments are just like, hey, man, it's all good.
I know.
Like, no, I'm just messing around.
Lefko thought that's what you were trying to do. Like, you were seeking that.
Hey, we're still
fishing
for compliments.
You're fishing. Because all the comments, right? All the comments were, Ryan, it's okay, man. We still love you. You do a great job.
Nice. Hey, Lefko. Of course he thought that. Are you kidding me? I was not fishing. I swear I wasn't fishing for any.
Not a lot of them, though. That was the thing. I kept that because you tagged us.
People took it seriously. Like, I was really down in the dumps. No, it's good. I don't care. I'll be wrong.
Good action.
I was just like, you call yourself a doctor. No, but, I mean, let's get into it. I mean, that was obviously huge to see him do that. Two home runs. Amazing. We've been just raving about this pitching. We had Bill Kruger on earlier, and it's fun to talk to pitchers about what we're seeing right now because it feels like, and I'm not projecting and saying this is who they're going to be, but it feels like we are – watching the beginnings of what could end up being a really, really special rotation. I mean, maybe historical if health is there and all, a lot has to go their way. But, I mean, man, who has a better 1-5 than the Mariners in baseball?
I don't think anyone. Unless it's a small glimpse of like a certain batch of guys on a team that is all of a sudden like reeled off a couple starts in a row. But when you're talking about the consistency or the projectability too, and I know you guys had Bill on it at 3:00, and I guarantee he would love this because he loves it. We talk about it all the time. He loves when guys throw inside, when they challenge, when they're not just going pitching away from contact, when they're not getting caught up in some of the analytical side of things. You've got three young pitchers, 24, 25, 26. They're all smart dudes, don't get me wrong. But they have an element of that old school attack mode in them, especially the guy pitching tonight, George Kirby. When he's pitching inside, I feel like it's still that lost art pitching inside. Now, and again, I know he pitched to the top of the strike zone, but when that fastball's on the inner half of the plate, forget about it. It's insane. Some of the outings this year, especially the Texas Rangers, by about the fourth inning on, this is one of the best offenses in baseball, if not the best. Fourth inning on, you could just see Murphy just setting up in all day long. Two-seamer in on the hands to lefties. And all of a sudden, that even the breaking ball in on lefties, and then four-seam in on righties, and it's just a reaction from the hitters, like, oh man, like this is going to be so difficult.
Why is that old school though? Why is there a reluctance to go inside because they're afraid of plunking guys or they're not getting the call? So, why the change?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? So like, pitching now is all about. It used to be, you go back 10 years ago, it was all about how well can you command the baseball. Obviously, everyone wants to throw hard and have good stuff, blah blah blah. But the foundation of it, and it still is, but the foundation of young pitchers, when you're in able AA, AAA, is like everyone had good stuff, but some guys who didn't have great stuff, if it was the command thing, that's how you developed. You developed commanding a baseball. Like you had to command, as a starting pitcher, you had to command three pitches minimum. Then it all shifted, and then technology rolls in, and now it's about what ball behavior can you create. How much crazy spin can you generate on a slider? How much backspin, if you throw a four-seam, can you generate to pitch up in the strike zone? So now it's just pure swing and miss, and that's it. Again, there's nothing wrong with that. You want guys to swing and miss. But what happens is, in the process of that, the pitching on, quote-unquote, both sides of the plate, right, when you are a guy who can command a baseball, like George Kirby can, he has both, man. He's got stuff and command, right? But even if you throw 88 and you can command both sides of the plate, it's an absolute weapon. That is a lost art. You guys do not work out in the winter. They don't work on the command of both sides of the plate. They don't. They work on north and south, not the east and west aspect of it. And so when you see that, and from a hitter standpoint too, hitters can dive in, hitter swings change because they want to launch the ball. Therefore, guys want to pitch up in the strike zone more often. I get that. But from a hitter standpoint, they're like, okay, you're going to try and as soon as you can get to this wipeout slider, because that's your biggest put away, your biggest whiff, your biggest swing and miss pitch, you're going to go to that. Therefore, you're going to try and go away from outside the strike zone. You're not going to pitch me in. You make a mistake in, it's getting crushed. Okay. And so that's therefore for guys to simplify, I just want swing and miss, and I want this guy to chase. Pitching in, lost art.
Wow. Don't know how to follow that. You guys had a great conversation going. No, I kind of want to follow along those lines, though, of, Bryce Miller, as he comes up in this era, like you were mentioning, and with the high fastball spin rate and all the modern era of pitching, is he the perfect pitcher from what you've seen for this situation?
That's a really, when you think about that, when you think about development standpoint, RPM is the new velocity, right? Like, it was all about, okay, how hard can we get these guys to throw a baseball? Now it's obviously, there's so many different variables to a fastball now. Like, for example, all right, I'll get to Bryce Miller in one sec, but the three guys we've been talking about, right? Logan Gilbert last night, George Kirby and Bryce Miller the night prior to that. So the three fastballs are all good for different reasons. So for Logan, it's the extension. And it's the extension and the angle, right? He's 6'6". Bryce, it's the high spin at 95, ridiculous spin for a 95-mile-per-hour fastball. And for George Kirby, it's now he's got that two-seamer, the movement on that pitch with the command, but it's more so the command. So all these fastballs do things differently. When you talk about pure stuff, Bryce Miller is that guy that you hope that he's like kind of the tip of the iceberg where you're like, okay, I want my guys, when I'm talking about development, to get to that point in regards to generating that RPM at the top of the strike zone. But the other thing too, man, he had to learn, and he said this, coming up in the minor leagues, he had a full, we talked to JP Morosi, brought this up yesterday. And when you read the articles about Bryce Miller, he says, the one thing, I have to learn how to pitch up in the strike zone. It's not that cut and dry where I just pitch up here, you'll be fine. There's a mentality to it. So I think, when you watch Bryce, 100%, this generation of pitcher, when you talk about a four-seam fastball, he's the guy,
If the Mariners were in a one-game situation right now, they win, get to the playoffs, Everybody's rested. Who's your guy?
George Kirby.
Above Luis Castillo?
Yeah. Right now? Like,
yeah. If it happened today.
And all of a sudden.
Because that was my answer, too.
Yeah, George Kirby, 100%.
Yeah, John Stanton came by, and we were talking about that, and he said right now Luis Castillo would be his guy.
Like, really?
If we're talking right now?
Yeah. I've got to see. Again, look, nothing taken away from this rotation. Right. I mean, we're spoiled, right? But you see what you saw from Luis Castillo. Now, a couple things on this. If you saw what you see from him, a couple times in a row, And who we got coming up? He's facing the Pirates. If we see what we see against the Pirates, and then who we got after the Yankees?
At the Rangers.
Okay, you see that again? So the next couple starts for him, you see the same thing? All right, I might change my mind. Right now, George Kirby. And remember, when you talk about like a playoff and a presence, having the presence and stuff, again, against the Blue Jays in that big playoff game, awesome, right? Luis Castillo.
Yeah.
But George Kirby, what about him against the Astros? Yeah. I know they didn't win, but ice in his veins,
ridiculous.
Man.
Ridiculous. Who would be your guy, Lefko?
Right now, George Kirby.
Yeah.
I think it's, you know, he's lights out. He doesn't walk guys. He has that aura about him. You know, when we talk to him, he embraces that big game pitching role. So I think this will be every time he goes out there, it's exciting to see what he does. And like you like to bring up, the 8 straight quality starts. That's just incredible.
8 straight. I know. 8 straight. He's got 5 total walks on the season right now.
Well, he hasn't.
And he was mad at the 4 when we asked him.
Yeah.
He hasn't gotten to the 6th inning twice. Yeah. Of all these stuff.
His opening game was his worst game of the season. First game of the season, I think he gave up 4 runs, and he's had 8 consecutive quality starts since.
Yeah, and I mean,
I think, 3 of the last 4, he's gone at least 7, something like that?
Yeah, take out that first start. He hasn't given up any more than 3 runs. And by the way, you look at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 of these starts out of the, 8 or 9?
He's got 9 total.
He's gone into the 7th. I mean, it's insane. It's insane.
Yeah, well, Ryan, you guys, I mean, you're calling this game on TV. You mentioned that. Have you looked at this Pirates team much? Or when you look at this series, how important is it for the Mariners? Not necessarily just to win the series, but maybe give themselves a position to keep trying to sweep this team, because they have really leveled off.
Yeah, you mean the Pirates, right?
Yeah, the Mariners to get a chance to win and sweep
the
Pirates.
For sure, man. I think when you look at the Pirates, and again, a tougher matchup than what we've seen in the last 4 days, but they've had some bumps. The last 2 series, they've lost both the series. April, though, they came out of the gates just firing. Everyone's like, who are these Pirates? There's some magic there. But they have really tailed off. One thing they did in the month of April, runners in scoring position, it was like historic, the pace they're on, getting guys in. It was insane. That has really leveled off. The last series, I went back and looked at the series against the Rangers. They had so many opportunities, they just couldn't convert, especially against that Rangers bullpen, which isn't great. So I think that when you look at the Pirates when you stand back and look at them, you're like, wow, this isn't a bad team. But they're scuffling right now. There you go. Easy word. There you go.
I like that you use that.
By the way, I've used it like 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, everybody does.
It's in my head.
Yeah.
I like it.
All the cool kids use it.
That's right.
Yeah.
But, they're a little vulnerable right now. They're out on the road, out in the East Coast. This is a chance for them to take two or three for sure.
Yeah. I had been reading about the Pirates early in the season and looking at what was going on with them. They were 20-8 on April 29th, 20-8, and they were the story. Like, oh, the Pirates, nobody expected this, and hadn't paid a ton of attention to them. And I went back and started looking at their schedule. Since then, 20-8, they've gone 5-16.
Yeah.
They are now 25-24. They've only won 5 games since their 20-8 start. So they have really maybe become the team people thought they were, which kind of changes my perception of this series, that I thought, okay, buckle up. This is going to be tough.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it won't be tough. I think tonight's their toughest pitching matchup for this Mariners offense with who the Pirates are sending out there. But I look at it and go, yeah, you should take this series. Whereas before I was like, okay, win all 4 against the A's because you don't know what's going to happen in that Pirates series. Now I'm like, this team has really been struggling or scuffling. And I think you should feel like you are expected to take 2 of 3 from them.
Well, they were 20-9 when they've faced off against Tampa. And I remember when you watch MLB Network and some of the net, you're like, oh, the 2 best teams are facing off Tampa. And look at these records. And this is, you know, they were both on historic pace. And then they got swept. And then they end up losing 6 straight. And since then, it's been a disaster since then. It really has.
Well, when you look at them, though, there is one guy who has been a big question mark about, well, the Mariners have tried harder to keep him. And Carlos Santana has become a regular part of this Pirates team. Do you think there's going to be a little more weighted attention on what he does compared to what the Mariners DHs do this weekend and vice versa there?
Well, hey, look, I brought up the DH thing to JP Morosi yesterday, right?
Yeah.
And I'm on the fence about it. I wanted to ask him because, you know, he's kind of got that out from the outsider's perspective. We get so caught up in it, but we understand that the way the Mariners are built, there's certain reasons why they're built a certain, which helps them out in certain situations. If the Mariners went out, I think what did Santana sign with the? It was a 1-year deal with the Pirates.
Mm-hmm. It was like 7, right? Let me see.
Something
one
rather.
Year it was, 7.
It was a fairly
very affordable deal. But let me ask you this: all right, if the Mariners came out and said, "All right, if the Mariners came out early in the offseason and said, "All right, we're going to get Carlos Santana," would you guys be like, hold on a minute, there's all these other options, or I wanted to get excited about these other options for DHs as the offseason rolls on?
I'll say this, if they said you can have Santana, Pollock, LaStella, Wong, I would say give me Santana.
Right.
Seriously.
Right. Yeah. No, I understand that. I totally understand that. I'm saying from a, because when the season ended, you know, he did some good things in the playoffs, but, and there was some good things in the clubhouse, which is really valuable.
Yeah.
But when the season ended, I remember looking back going, they can go out if they are willing to go out and make a push here. He's not the guy. There's other guys out here. But then as it tailed off, nothing happened.
No, you're 1,000% right. Because if you look at his numbers in totality with the Mariners, it's not like he came here and just raked.
No.
He had some very timely hits. A lot of his home runs and his hits were in crucial situations. So he felt very clutch. But when you just look at overall what he brought, I felt like it was more about what he meant to Julio and just his veteran leader in the clubhouse and just being part of that. Because if you look at the numbers, you're going, oh, that's not – he's an older guy. I think he hit under 200. It wasn't great, but when he did come through, it seemed like the game was on the line and he came through, is how it felt.
You know what's interesting, too, and a lot has been said about, like, you know, the Mariners' philosophy, how they generate base runners, how they generate runs, right? The plate discipline and the grinding at-bats, as Scott Service calls it. And you look at Santana, he's a model for that, right? And you mentioned the impact he has on some young players. And Julio said that multiple times. He's like, oh, yeah, Carlos Santana's helped me out. But then you bring in, you know, Teoscar Hernandez, who, again, I feel like he's going to go off once a few things get settled with him. But then you bring in Colton Wong, some of these other guys, and there hasn't been that same sort of philosophy that the Mariners attached to when you talk about a clubhouse presence or how we're going to go about these at-bats or even in the hitters' meetings and things like that. So, it's easy in hindsight as we're looking at this and he's doing his thing with the Pirates, but I don't know. Just at the time when the season ended, I'm like, okay, they're going to move on from him and they're going to go out and...
Yeah, it didn't feel like, oh, you got to retain
him. Yeah,
I was with you.
Does it feel like, though, at least looking at the rest of the lineup, Julio maybe has found some consistency, even taking the opponent out of it, just three multi-hit games in that series and on a four-game hit streak. Was there anything that you noticed out of this past couple of... out of the stretch that led you to think, he might have found a new level here?
I still think, look, and before, even during the skid, right, still hitting the ball hard, ball's going on the ground, right? Cheers, man, thank you, awesome. Because everyone's watching, by the way, everyone knows exactly the fact I've got a soda water in front of me.
Yeah.
The one thing I'm noticing a little bit, there's still that little bit of pressing where he's swinging at pitches just outside the strike zone a little more than what you would like, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You feel like he's still chasing.
There's still a little bit of that. But he's, again, the ball off the bat, it's coming off the bat hard, still getting in the ground. He did this at the beginning of last year. And I said this at this point last year, man. It's like, look at the ball off his bat. It's just different. It's like a little league infield. You know, we got that little man child. He's crushing the ball. No one's going to get to it because the exit velocity is just too high for these little kids.
Little man child.
That's what it looks like.
There's always the kid who's too big to be out there. Like, everybody's going, he's not 12. He's not 12. He's got a beard. Look at him. Come on. The little man child.
Right.
Now, we were talking about this. Lefko and I were talking about last night. You complete the sweep. That's tough against any team. I don't care. I know the A's are horrible. I get it. But still, winning four in a row is a big deal. Now, nitpicking the game. They got shut down pretty much, the lineup did. You had five total hits. Four of them came from two guys. Two hits for Julio, two for France, and Teoscar had the other one. The rest of the lineup got shut down. It just, to me, it bleeds into, all right, have they found their rhythm yet? Are guys finding it yet? Or how do you feel about the lineup as a whole right now?
Well, okay, if you break it down individual games, like I think like Julio had like three punch-outs one game, so did Kelmick, right? Three strikeouts. I can't remember the situations. Looking back, I haven't got my computer in front of me, but I haven't got all my nerd numbers in front of me. But the one thing I will say, glass half full on this, you've got last night, you're going for the sweep. J.P. Sears... He's having a decent year, and he's looked good against the Mariners. Well, they got him. I mean, when look, I know only a couple guys, you know, went deep, whatever, but they got to him. The fact that Kotze took him out when he did was like, wow, thank you. That was the point of the game. I'm like, all right.
Yeah, 50-some pitches.
Yeah, because I'm like, oh, man, this is going to be very flat tonight if JP Sears stays out there because his bullpen is terrible. Look at that. Then you go back the last couple nights. There was still, the night prior to that, I think it was the one where Waldichuk was pitching. And it was just like, just a matter of time. Second inning, they couldn't get, he was on the ropes, couldn't get him. Fourth inning, sure enough, got him. Okay. So you kind of predict that. But I think overall, when you look at it, if you are going to strike out that much, be able to beat teams with the home run. And that's what we saw for a couple of those nights.
Yeah. I think, you do look, and I kind of brought this up, and I know you said, Bob, hey, I got to the bad too early at the start of the show.
Can't wait to talk about the negative.
But, yeah, when you now you do turn the page to a new opponent, and that game last night, the Mariners did find a way to win, but three guys got hits, and that was it. And then you can also look at the flip side of winning against the A's twice by just a run where they needed – you know, that one inning, you know, all the runs in that Tuesday night game came off of double home run. Do you now look at the lineup still and say, all right, there are some questions heading into this series against the Pirates?
Yeah, I think that, and it's a different expectation when you just expect it to be the team, and if you don't, it's such a letdown, right? I went into that A series and said, as an individual, and I've said this to you guys a bunch, baseball, yes, it's a team sport, there's team chemistry involved, etc., right? But at the same time, you have to win those little individual battles, whatever that may be. You go in the video room with a hitting coach, and it's just one little tweak you want to make from a mechanical standpoint, or one little thing per at-bat. If you win those little battles, now again, they've just won four straight, okay? How they did it, pitching. How they did it offensively, you know what? Couple big home runs from just a couple guys. I get it. That's going to be a little bit of the trend we're going to see. But inside that clubhouse, if you call it Cal Raleigh, he's working on something to maybe eliminate the swings and misses or to get to a certain pitch. If he's winning those little battles in games like that and you can still win four straight, I'm all for it.
Ryan, we love you, man.
I appreciate it. I love being out here, guys.
Open door anytime you want to come on. You don't even have to ask. You just call and say, put me on now.
I nearly missed it last time. Remember last time I was here?
Yeah.
You did, right? We had to get you on the phone.
Yeah, because I was stuck in traffic. There's traffic again today.
And your phone.
How dare these people in Seattle get in on the freeway?
We should have called you today at 2:45 for What's Bugging Bob. And, you know, you did this already now. So we could have called you in traffic, and you could have complained about the traffic.
And we see that you got your phone back from Chris Flexen. So that's nice.
Oh, yeah. That was shocking. Man.
That was bad. That was bad. Hey, thanks so much, man.
Of course.
There you go. Ryan Roland Smith, our pal from Root Sports. Great stuff from him. Coming up, a couple of current NFL players really don't like one new NFL rule. We're going to get into that next. It's Wyman and Bob Lefko in for Wyman, live from Edgar's Cantina. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
We are live at Edgar's Cantina here at T-Mobile Park. Got batting practice underway. Mariners are in the cage. It is the City Connect uniforms going on out there. We've got the colors all over the boards here and everything. I love the colors.
Got the trident up on the scoreboard. I know that makes one of our coworkers happy.
Yeah. Lefko and I were just out here playing fashionistas, looking at all the uniforms. And I love that. I think the hats look cool. I love the jerseys. I'm still out on the black pants. Still out on the. I mean, look, we got sitting in front of us out here in left field is Logan Gilbert and Ty France standing next to each other, just shagging fly balls and having a conversation. But you look at those pants, you know, Logan's got his pulled up to the knee. Ty's got his all the way down. They look like softball, don't they? It looks like a softball.
I like the shoes. Ty France rocking some cool shoes. But yeah, those pants, especially tonight when it's 80 degrees out there right now. Yeah, it's just. It's not a good look. I mean, they were very diplomatic in talking about the uniforms. You did try to get Taylor Trammell in trouble by asking him what he thought.
Heads up. It's on our...
Oh, and there it is. There it is. On the canopy. And over. Oh. And blocked. So the good and the bad, we have a canopy out here, and the good and the bad of that, you lose eyesight, though. Like, that ball came over the netting, and then I kind of lost track of it,
which
is kind of scary.
Yeah, I'm watching
so
your back.
I don't know exactly where that went, but that's good there. So, yeah, we do have a foul ball. We have Joe Block waiting to go on deck. So Pirates broadcast will join us next segment. But, yeah, it's a great day to be out here.
It's an awesome day to be out here. So, yeah, we will talk about the Pirates. Their play-by-play man will join us coming up in the next segment. Joe Block will be here. A little trip around the NFL, though. We'll get a little NFL conversation here. Who do you think – where do you think DeAndre Hopkins lands? In case you guys missed that bit of news, the Cardinals said goodbye. We're going to go ahead and take the $20-plus million cap hit, dead cap hit, let him go after three seasons. I think he's still a very valuable weapon. Is he at the peak of his powers? Probably not. He's been dealing with some injuries over the past few years, but he still is one of the best receivers in the league, I believe. He's got ridiculous hands.
seeing him, and he talked about where he'd want to end up. He listed five quarterbacks that he'd like to play with. Here's what he had to say.
One of my favorite quarterbacks that I've been watching since he came in the league is Josh Allen. Josh Ooh. Allen he reminds me of an old school or of a new school Andrew Luck. I love Josh Allen. Jalen Hurts, he's Houston kid, your dog Jalen. Patrick Mahomes, obviously.
Number four,
I'm gonna have to go with the underdog, man. Not a lot of people respect this guy, but you know, as a throwing quarterback, Lamar Jackson, obviously. But my number five quarterback, man, because there's some good quarterbacks out there that's young and good. I'm gonna have to go with my dude at San Diego or the Chargers.
Herbert.
Wyman, San Diego Chargers.
There. Yeah, the L.A. Chargers. And he said Herbert. He didn't say Burrow, which can you imagine him with Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase? I know they've got T. Higgins out there as well, but boy, just him and Burrow. I'm surprised he didn't mention him, but he was kind of put on the spot there.
Yeah.
But, so do you think he ends up on one of those five teams?
Absolutely. And I think at this point, he wants to play Buffalo. For a contender. Yeah.
I'm feeling Buffalo.
They could use it. I mean, and you got to think, Buffalo might be in desperation mode. The Bills have to be thinking, our window's closing soon. All
Imagine
of a sudden.
Him and Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, and Ooh. that's why you have to make that move. You have to get a little bold. You've seen the Chiefs now handle you in the playoffs the past couple of years. The Bengals went into Buffalo and showed that they won a Buffalo game. They won in the snow. So if you're the Bills and you're looking at the Chiefs only getting better, the Bengals still ascending, and the Bengals made a good offseason move to solidify their offensive line, give Josh Allen some weapons. That would be great. At this point, it does feel like DeAndre Hopkins can pick and choose and say, I only want to go to four teams. Like, four teams will be a Super Bowl contender. And the Cardinals, I know they realized that. It was interesting that they weren't able to get anything for him. But now the Bills can kind of do like what we saw the Rams do with Odell Beckham Jr. Whatever he wants, sign him, and maybe he'll win you a Super Bowl.
Now, the other bit of news going on out there is the new fair catch rule, the new kickoff rule, where they are just slowly working towards eliminating it. I think that's been made pretty obvious without them actually saying that, citing player safety. So now wherever you make the fair catch, even if it's on the 2-yard line, it's going to be on the 25. They're going to spot it at the 25. And Jason and Travis Kelce do a podcast, New Heights podcast, and express their opinion on the new rule.
I think this is absolutely stupid. I don't think this is making the game safer. I think it's making it more boring. And taking a lot of excitement out of the game's opening play, this is whack.
Yeah,
but I'm not.
I mean, we're just getting closer and closer to getting rid of special teams. I mean, it's like,
what do we?
The only thing left now is punt. Like, I don't. When is somebody not going to fair catch it and take the ball to 25? Unless it's just a really bad kick, right? I don't know.
Yeah, unless you're just squib kicking it and you got to return it.
Yeah, or I mean, like maybe if it was like a windy day and it was bad hang time and a short kick, you'd still return it. But the vast majority of kickoffs are, it's going to be even exponentially higher now that it's going to be a fair catch, touchback, you know, no return.
Boo, that's whack. And it's taken away from the excitement of a kickoff, man. I love watching kickoffs.
That's from players in the game right there. I love that. I'm absolutely 1,000% on board with both of them. It's whack. Boo. I love it. And Andy Reid also commented on it. It was in a different story I didn't send to you, but it's essentially the same thing. He's like, you know, I'm paraphrasing. I don't remember his exact wording, but it was basically, where does it end where we're just slowly phasing out kickoffs? And that's what they're doing. I don't like it. I get that they're citing player safety. I'd love to see the numbers in terms of, all right, just how much more dangerous, how many more injuries are occurring. How does it compare historically versus, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago? I don't know. It doesn't feel like, from watching, again, I'm not looking at the injury stats on those particular plays. It just feels like, as a fan and we're watching every week, I don't notice that there are more injuries being caused because it's a kickoff.
Yeah, it's preemptive, though. I mean, and it seems like a big deal now, but the league changes. The NFL changes. They have time and time again made rules, tweak things to streamline player safety, player enjoyment, and what they prioritize the most, scoring. So this doesn't really have much of an impact on scoring. You still want to keep your offenses. You want the showcase stars. It does change a lot, and the Kelces are very outspoken. I love that it's an entertaining podcast, but I think We're all going to get over it eventually. Ultimately, it's the kickoff. I mean, it's three or four times a team does that in a game. It's not the punt. The punt's being the same. And
well,
the league average.
But is it next?
Yeah. No, not, I don't think punts because there's so much hang time. You're barely returning them anyway. That's the thing by the time you call for a fair catch. So with the rate of touchbacks on kickoffs in the NFL anyway, the league averaged 65% last year. Yeah, it's going to be weird if you ultimately get rid of the kickoffs, but it's not a play that impacts much of the back and forth, the key moments you're looking for. You're not, to quote John Morosi here, has anyone left the game saying, I want more waiting? Has anyone gone to an NFL game and left and said, you know what, I wish there would have been more kickoffs?
No, but we're all gonna adapt, you're right, and we'll all sit there and take it. Doesn't mean I have to be happy about it. I don't think it makes it better.
It's only a one-year thing.
It's not a better, yeah, and we'll see what goes on. I assume it's going to continue, though. I don't think it makes it better. It's certainly not a better product. I think Kelce, a guy who's in the middle of it, both of them,
yeah,
they're players. They're in the game today. They're not old guys. They're not old heads talking about it. They're in it, and they're saying, boo. Boo on this. It's whack. It's whack. All right. I'm with them on that. All right. We'll get some firsthand insight on this Pirates team from their radio play-by-play man. Joe Block is going to join us next here live at Edgar's Cantina. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Block and Solve.
Now every morning from 6 to 10.
Jaron Reed, Seahawks defensive tackle, back with us. New and old defensive tackle. What's it like being back?
It's like a breath of fresh air. You know, I get to come back to where it all started. And, you know, hopefully go chase one of these rings. That's a dream, especially to win it where we started at. The Seahawks was first on my list, of course. And, you know, it's kind of where I wanted to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were able to make it happen.
That's pretty cool.
This is Seattle Sports.
On 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
Well, you guys heard me talking about this before, but one of the benefits, or I guess one of the positives that came out of the pandemic is, for me anyway, somebody that was going to the gym all of the time, trying to cut out time, trying to get there after the game and get there before it closes, all that. I started investing in my products at home, working with weights, working with different items at home, and slowly turning it into my own gym. And that's been done in a big way thanks to Johnson Fitness and Wellness. It's Bob Stelton here. They are the largest specialty fitness retailer in the country with a huge selection of top-rated equipment. Went in there, and I just pumped question after question out to their staff, and they had an answer for everything. They know their products inside and out, and they've got everything you could need. Treadmills, elliptical, strength equipment, recovery-aiding, sometimes sanity-saving massage chairs. And I've got one of those as well. Absolutely amazing. So if you're somebody that's trying to cut out time, trying to find time to work out and get it into your routine, working out at home is absolutely the best, and they've got everything you could possibly need there going on right now. I mean, you want to save money, you want to get out there and find that treadmill, find that elliptical you've been looking for. It's right there for you. Go out, check out Johnson Fitness and Wellness. They've got everything you're going to need. And right now, by the way, you're going to save a lot of money. You're going to save $200 on your purchase. Right? So they're going to treat you right out of the door. Get out there, check it out. They call it the Buy More, Save More sale. Save up to $200 on your next purchase. Restrictions apply. See store for details. Johnson Fitness and Wellness stores are in Bellevue, Linwood, and Tacoma, or check them out online at johnsonfitness.com.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
We continue live from Edgar's Cantina here at T-Mobile Park. It's Wyman and Bob. Lefko in for Wyman here. Seattle Sports on 710. Mariners getting set to begin their series with the Pirates, who are in town for a three-game set. Game one coming up tonight, and we have the pleasure of speaking to the play-by-play man on radio and television with his team. They rotate just like they do here in Seattle.
Okay. Nice.
Joe Block is with us. How are you, man?
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
It's good.
Great.
It's good to talk to you. The weather's perfect for you guys.
Oh, it's upper 70s, sunny. You know, I heard it rained here a lot or something, but not today.
That's a damn lie.
Yeah, no, it's been great since we got here.
Hey, you know, these teams obviously don't play each other very often. When you come into this series, are you at home? Are you crunching, looking at numbers, looking at what this team does, getting familiar with everybody and everything that's going on with the Mariners?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know two-thirds of the players before yesterday, I think. Really, honestly. But, and I'm glad that baseball has turned to having the teams play the teams every year because for that reason. I mean, I want to see Julio Rodriguez play, and we don't get that opportunity. In years past, it'd be every 3 years. It's been 4 years since the Pirates even played the Mariners, so 7 years since we've come here. So it gives us an opportunity to be more frequent guests, I guess.
Well, yeah, conversely, Mariners fans probably don't know a lot about the Pirates, so It's great to learn a little bit more. The one name we all do know, Brian Reynolds, because he was such a hot trade piece and topic of conversation here all offseason. Hey, would Brian Reynolds be a good fit?
I really wanted him here.
See? Everyone really wanted him. Turns out he wasn't available, and now he's with you guys long term. What has he meant to this team, and now that he is kind of signed, what's been the reaction around that?
Yeah, he signed through the decade, just a consistent hitter, switch hitter, good outfielder, too. He plays left field primarily. We'll play some center field like he did last year, but when you're in the boat of the Pirates, losing 100 games the last few years, you got to get some players. They ended up trading Andrew McCutchen to get Brian Reynolds. Now McCutchen's back, so start to get those pieces, sign them, keep them around. It's a formula that a lot of other teams have used, of course, but he's one of those pieces that if the Pirates are going to be a good team consistently going forward and a contender, then you got to have those guys, and so the Pirates have Brian Reynolds.
Now, just saying, just like you, I'm reading about the Pirates. I'm looking at the schedule, looking at what you guys have done. And, you know, you were at one point, you're 20-8 on April 29th. You're 20-8. Since then, 5-16. What's gone? Is there a common denial? Has there been one thing that's been a sticking point?
Yeah, a little bit. I think they haven't hit nearly as much as they did. I mean, they were hitting like crazy and then have not hit. Nearly as much. Pitching's been pretty consistent. Defense has not been all that consistent, up and down. The base running, the base stealing specifically, they stole, I don't know, 40-some bases in April and then have been thrown out more than they've been successful in May. So that has changed the dynamic. Now, some of that is just they're not getting as many base runners and they're trailing in games. And they've had that happen a lot. But typically speaking, and I think it's the case here, you got a young ball club, even with all the veterans that they brought in. They've got a ton of talent, but they're going to be inconsistent. A lot of these guys are 23, 24 years old. You might see them for a month, look really good, look like all-stars, perennial all-stars, and then you might see them make a bunch of mistakes or strike out a lot and that kind of thing. And that's what we're seeing from this team right now but all the young guys kind of did it all at once, and now they're kind of not all doing it at once. So I think that's why the team's been up and down.
So what impact has Carlos Santana had? Because he is a guy who's certainly not a young guy, but a valuable locker room presence when he was here, especially for Julio in the clubhouse last year. What's he been to this Pirates team so far?
I haven't been 37 in a long time, Mike, so he's a young guy to me. But no, in terms of baseball, yes. He's an older guy, but yes, he has been a huge influence on these guys. Just what to do. He's out there every day, 9 innings, first base. At 37 years old, he's stolen 5 bases this year.
Wow, is he really?
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that it's little, but these guys see that. And it's not just the players from Latin America. It's everybody in that clubhouse has a whole lot of respect for him, the way that he plays. And it's a quiet leadership, but he also pulls guys aside and talks to them a little bit. And that's so important. I mean, that was by design. The Pirates wanted to bring in players that were very well respected, play the game the right way, and are still good. I mean, the Pirates needed to improve their ball club. So that was the idea with bringing in Carlos, and someone with that great playoff experience is really important for this young club right now.
You know, one guy that isn't with you right now that really bums me out, just as a baseball fan, I was fascinated by him, and that's O'Neill Cruz.
Yes.
A 6'7 shortstop.
Yes.
And just give me a scouting report, just because all I see are highlights and things
sure.
like that. He's such an anomaly.
Well, yeah. I mean, you think about that. I mean, what did they say about A-Rod, though? I mean, when Cal Ripken, the 6'4 shortstop.
Yeah, they were considered huge.
Right, you know, and Nomar and the guys of that era. So 6'7, what's the difference? Well, some of that has to do, same thing with Randy Johnson when he started coming through here. Well, the guy that tall, there's so many arms, and the arms are so long, the legs are so long. How do you locate that kind of thing? Well, he figured it out, and I think that's the same thing with Cruz playing shortstop. All right, you got to have good footwork. Otherwise, you're going to throw the ball away, or you're going to get tangled up a little bit. We saw that sometimes at shortstop. But in terms of the hitter, what a great hitter he's becoming when he's been out there, because obviously he hits the ball very hard, harder than anybody pretty much in baseball consistently. So that power is there. It was just it's unfortunate because when a guy is 23, 24 years old, you want him to get the reps. You want him to get those at-bats, get out there and keep getting better. So he's not going to come back until at least August. So we're missing him because it's been a revolving door at shortstop pretty much for the Pirates.
Well, Joe, the pitcher tonight for the Pirates, Mitch Keller, he has been really fun to watch this year. And I don't want to say has it come out of nowhere because I haven't seen him year in and year out. But to you, what has this year been like for him? And has it been a bit of a surprise?
No, because I'm around the team and I see it. Yeah, but really, this I didn't know who George Kirby was, and I'm like, wow, this guy looks pretty good. You know, and that's just the unfamiliarity. But Keller, to me, I thought before the season should emerge as an all-star. He's even gone a step beyond that and been, you know, one of the top five pitchers in the league. He's the Pirates' best player right now. He is a guy that consistently just eliminates hitters. It's a surprise when somebody really squares him up. And it happens once or twice a game usually, but he's not going to walk you. He's going to come in just like Kirby. He's going to come in. Those two are number one and two in baseball in how many pitches they throw in the zone percentage-wise. Number one and number two. Kirby one, Keller two. So those guys have great stuff, and they're going to come right after you. So that's fun watching that that kind of pitcher. But he's got five or six different pitches, and he knows exactly what he's doing out there. So don't be surprised tonight. I know the Mariners, well, they haven't scored a lot of runs this year. That's going to not be a demerit to the Mariners. It would be a strength of Keller's if that's what ends up transpiring tonight. Should be kind of that low-scoring pitcher's do, I would think, at least for tonight's game.
Before we let you get out of here, I'm just curious what the fan expectations are. What's the response been to such a hot start? As I said, 28. You know, I mean, it's...
Well, the expectations changed after April. I mean, it was just, let's... And this was the mantra in spring training for the Pirates. Let's have an improved season. You know, you lose 100 games. We got to get better. We got young players, they're talented. Now they're in the major leagues. They're not just the prospects now. Now they're in the major leagues. Got to get better. Well, the Pirates haven't gotten better. They're around 500 right now. They're first, second place pretty much all year. Mm-hmm. That's way better than where they've been. But when you start 20-8 and then you have the May like you did, you say, well, wow, this is not what we were hoping for. We want this team to win the pennant. Well, maybe not this year, but maybe this year. Just the fact that they're in the conversation and then expectations have been higher, that's a good thing for this Pirates team right now.
Yeah, well, it's going to be fun. Three-game series starts tonight. Joe Block is their play-by-play man. Pleasure to speak with you, man.
This is great.
Thanks so much for coming by. Plus, you're in the right spot. You said, I love coffee. I said, well, there you go.
Yeah, that's great. I drink it all day. So I'm going to have a cup right now.
We appreciate you, man.
Hey, thanks, guys.
There you go.
It,
Joe Block, again, voice of the Pittsburgh Pirates. Coming up, he's had a terrific start to his MLB career. Mariners rookie pitcher Bryce Miller will join us next year as we continue live from Edgar's Cantina at T-Mobile Park. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710.